Well, it's time now for Changing Australia. And for a decade, she was an unmissable host on youth music station Triple J.
This is House Party on Triple J. I'm Nina, Las Vegas, and it is a big show tonight.
Nina Argzarian, otherwise known as Nina Las Vegas, is an internationally recognised DJ and music producer. She's been a very powerful female force on the music scene, performing at major festivals and other venues, both here in Australia and abroad.
Give it up for Nina Las Vegas, live in the boiler room.
Nina has also been a mentor for new artists and brought new genres to a wider audience, launching her own female-led music label and developing grassroots music programs for underrepresented and marginalised youth. I'm delighted to say that Nina Las Vegas is my guest today on Changing Australia. Nina, a very warm welcome to you.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well. Where did this all start for you? Was it back in the early days in Wagga?
Everything evolves. Hey, I don't know where one thing started, but yeah, I grew up in Wagga Wagga on Wiradjuri country. I went to public school. I did a lot of music, drama, everything you could do after school I did. I even did soccer.
And where did, I mean, the traditional music path is one thing. When it comes to producing and DJing, and especially with some of the work that you've done, it's kind of embracing some of those forms but upending them as well. When you were listening to music as a kid, were some of those thoughts running through your mind that, hey, this might sound better if we did this or that, or I wonder what that would sound like? Was it there for you?
No, I don't think that's how my brain worked then, but I definitely think I wanted to be immersed in it, if that makes sense. Mm. I don't think, because it was like the 90s and the 2000s, I don't think I thought about remixes or anything like that. Dance music was very much in it. A new space in Australia. We had Kylie, we had, you know, Itchy and Scratchy, but it wasn't really epic like it is now, you know. It wasn't everywhere. It was very much an indie culture, and that's how I grew up. However, I definitely liked the full scope of music, so the art around it, the videos, the, you know, community, the radio, the shows. I liked all parts of what music could do, and I think that's how I started being behind the scenes, because I realized you didn't always have to be front facing. Mm. And that's where that grew, and that was through technical knowledge and learning the piano, having access to like an old Yamaha Y77, having a dad who loved buying computers, you know, all that kind of stuff played into it. Used iMovie before, you know, it was something that you did regularly, made video clips rather than, I just always looked sideways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Did you sort of need to know the rules, if you like, of music to then be able to break them later on?
I think my parents would love to say you do, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, learning conservatorium-led piano is how I got here. However, I do like that knowledge, but I also do think that's a privilege to have. So I think that it's just about learning what you like and how you like to experience music. If you like practicing, go for it. I didn't. Mm. That's still my downfall.
you really embraced electronic music when you moved to Sydney. You became a DJ, but not only in what you were doing, you were, it was very important to you, looking at that early work, to champion underground talent and underrepresented music. Why did that resonate so strongly with you that was part of what you needed to do?
I think there were two sides to it, because as you mentioned, I founded Heaps Decent in, it's 20 years next year, so 2007. And that is a music organisation that works with young people, marginalised young people. And that was very much from my upbringing of my mother being within the Juvenile Justice Centre in my hometown. She was the principal there. I always had, a nuanced understanding of reformative justice and creative arts for, you know, people who don't have access to it. There was that element. And then also being at Triple J, having come from a regional background, I just knew there was lots of people that wanted to do cool stuff. So I always just looked outside the 1%, if that makes sense, and found amazing talent.
What sort of feedback did you get from some of these artists when you'd hear or see their work and think, right, I'm going to give that a platform, I'm going to play it? How blown away were they when they heard it on the wireless for the first time?
Look, it was honestly, like, pretty special at that time because our relationships were very much in real life. Obviously, Twitter and MySpace and all that stuff existed. Like, we're talking 20 years ago now, you know. I finished at Triple J in 2014 and Instagram was around. But it was a lot of swapping in real life. So if I went to Perth, I'd meet someone, I'd share music. There was Triple J Unearthed as well. There was email, like all the kind of early days blogs. I would play it and it was pretty instant because there wasn't as much as there is now. Everyone kind of has a platform now, whether it be on TikTok or, you know, YouTube or Twitch. The radio at that time was very pinnacle to being heard. And it still is. It's still like, especially I will, you know, die saying Triple J is an important platform for young artists in Australia. But yeah, it was pretty special because you could play something, you could let them know, or they would hear it and they would tell you thank you. Where now it's a bit more noisy. There's lots of places to be played. And not that it's less special, it's still very special. People don't realize how special it is because radio still is going everywhere in Australia and broadcasting across the world. But yeah, it was pretty sick. It was powerful.
Nina, after you left Triple J, you launched your own label, NLV Records. Mm-hmm. What spurred you to do that and how did you, I mean, launching something like that, there's a lot of moving parts to bring together. Was it tricky?
Yes. Straight answer, very. And I learned something new every day. I was very lucky to have management at the time that thought I could do something independently with them. So I started a joint venture to create NLV Records. I did it because I am a big, as I said earlier, a sidestepper, or I see a gap. I didn't see many, if any, Australian electronic-focused labels that were founded and led by females. So it was a big thing where I was like, man, this is going to be really difficult, but no one else is doing it. I'm going to give it a shot. And I did that, and I launched pretty much immediately the day I hung up, you know, the radio headphones. I started NLV Records with the first song on that morning. And it was cool. It was definitely naive at the start. Like, music and music business and contracts is so epically boring, but you have to learn it and you have to dig in the back. You know, you have to read, you have to take calls, you have to pay money. And I was lucky enough to be able to do all that, but yes, definitely not easy. And there was a moment initially after I left Triple J, yes, everything's cool, everyone's looking at me, what's she doing next? But those 3 to 4 years after were pretty tough because you're like, okay, no, I really have to do this. And then COVID happened in my sixth year of running the label. And that was like, oh my God, now I can't even DJ to support this, because my DJ income was paying for the label ultimately. So it was just like, yeah, it definitely wasn't easy, but it is beyond rewarding. It is just, so I'm so glad I've gone through that period because now I'm 11 years in, had a huge win last year with Nina Geraci.
At the Arias and elsewhere.
Every day is a new win, honestly. But, you know, that is something we both, Nina Geraci and myself and our teams and management and partners, because I run the label, but I work with so many wonderful people. And it's ultimately just being really organized. It's not brain science at all. It's just like being able to communicate all the different levels of where music can go.
You're listening to Changing Australia on Radio National Breakfast. My guest today is a DJ, music producer, Nina Ugzarian. You've performed at major festivals like Coachella and South by Southwest, Splendor in the Grass, to name a few. Some people are really interested in getting into this area. What advice would you give them on how you get through?
In terms of performing at festivals? Well, look, it is... It's again, I keep saying the word, but it is like, it's a journey and a privilege. The festivals are like the win because they are, you don't have to put all the pressure on yourself to sell the tickets. It's like a whole bunch of people that are expected to move a bunch of tickets. And right now it's a really tough time to expect people to pay money to see music. You know, we're in this like very expensive era of living. So playing them and being paid to play them is very, very lucky. I definitely think, though, if you're a young artist and you want to make an impact, you have to focus on where you are and what you do around you. And the one thing I continually tell young people if they want an agent or a manager or even people to hear their songs is make noise where you are. Even if you grow up in Tumut or Wagga or, you know, Mandra or something like that, you have, if you can get 50 people in a room, make it look like wild and fun, trust me, that noise travels. It's not dependent on you living in a major city or having the best team around. The biggest noise comes from your own community.
What's it like when you're DJing? Is it a bit of that, you know, they sometimes call it flow state. Are you completely immersed in that world?
The best gigs I am. The worst gigs, it's really hard because we play more bad gigs than good. When you're immersed.
Really?
Oh, yeah, come on. I've been doing this 20 years. You think I haven't played to nobody like 60 times? It happens. It happens to everybody. And it's no indication that's not you and your worth. It's a million things that can make that happen. You know, people might be boycotting a venue or not know it's on. Like, there's a million things that happen. It could be a venue. I once played in Berlin. No, I didn't play. No one showed up because they didn't tell anyone the club was open in the middle of winter on a Wednesday. You know, like, it's just life. But yeah, a flow state is the best way to do it when it's all happening and you love it. I think when I love my set, it is so easy. I can play for hours. I can just keep going. And it is about preparing. Like, people will think, oh no, they just show up, they chuck a USB in and do it. And yeah, like, you can if you've spent all week listening to new music, finding something exciting to play. Like, some of my favorite sets in the last year has been because I've put aside dedicated time to really trawl through new music, my own music, my label's music, and get excited to play something loud. And then, yeah, you can really get into it. And sometimes I've been really sick. I've been really sad. I've been like, you know, a million things on my mind and I have to go there and perform to people. But that is also like a little bit therapeutic too, because you just think, man, come on, snap out of it. You're here. You don't get to, like, it's when you think about it, I'm getting played to play my favorite music. Like, that's kind of a dream.
This decision that you made very early on, and that is to support, to platform, to give opportunities to others rather than pull the ladder up behind you. Now, more than a decade on, what's it like to see all of that flourishing?
It's a relief because I make good decisions, I guess. I just think it took a while because there have been many times when I've gone, man, if I just didn't think about anyone else and just focused on me, I could be doing so much more. But, like, something's always stopped me from doing that, if that makes sense. I've always put people first. Even when I was on radio, I was initially a producer. I was behind the scenes. And being front-facing was something that kind of organically happened. I think this journey has been something that is just who I am. It takes a lot to be front-facing. You know, artists like Nina Jirachi, they are on 24/7 and they are dedicated to their art. And that is so wonderful and lucky, but also really exhausting and draining, and there's no rest when you're going. I have this like balance where I can really, really put my energy into someone else and stand in the back and like also win. You know, it's like, it's pretty sweet. And ultimately it is a business, and I feel really glad that I'm a surviving label even with our organization too. Like, it's, we've survived, and like, we're not shutting down, which is not an uncommon story when you think about, you know, all the documentaries that are happening right now, and like looking at the Kylie documentary or, you know, the Robbie Williams one. Like, a lot of those entities, those smaller entities, probably don't exist in the same way, and I'm still here and I'm doing good. I'm finally employing people, you know, like, and that's been 11 years and I have staff. Like, that feels pretty cool, and it feels like I've made the right choices.
Nina, I'm so pleased we've had you on the program this morning. Thank you so much for joining me, and best wishes for all the opportunities that lay ahead. It's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening there to Nina Agzarian, otherwise known as Nina Las Vegas, a DJ, music producer and founder of the label NLV Records and co-founder of this group called Heaps Decent, which is trying to uplift the music and platform the music of others.